Judge Jim's Big Debate on Trax FM.
Welcome. Many thanks to Rendell. He was covering JJ. What a fantastic job you done there, young man. Fantastic. And many thanks to Rendell. Rendell will be back next Saturday from 7 p.m. in conjunction with Rendell Radio. Welcome to Judge Jim's Big Debate. It's a bit miserable here in London, but it's all happening here in the studios here at Trax FM. Judge, what you got for us? Take it away.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I have to concur. Great show, Rendell. Brilliant. So engaging. Kept me going as I was putting the last final touches together for the Big Debate. Fantastic. A lot of those 80s tunes I hadn't heard in a while. And extended versions to that as well. What a treat that was. Thank you, Rendell. Just hope you have a bit more luck with your flower pots. Anyway, look, it's Judge Jim's Big Debate. Here live on Trax FM, booming around the world, with the assistance of some newspapers and media sources, etc. As we came off air last week, well, you'll need those flower pots tied down, Ren, with this weather. Great British weather, isn't it? Oh, deary me. Anyway, we came off air, we didn't actually come off air, but we were on air when the Employment Tribunal fees were scrapped on the day. By the High Court, and I rushed out the next day. I didn't rush out the next day. I went out the next day and got the newspaper, and just to see what sort of stories were coming out. I'm sure there'll be a lot more once things unfold. This is really important to a lot of people. I know it might seem that it's out of date news, and there's a lot of things going on in the world just as of today. Of course, this is important that we do have an analysis on this. The fees were introduced by the then Lord Chancellor Chris Grayling under the coalition government from 2010, and these are the other bits and pieces that he put in place. Because if you remember rightly, last week I said about the other areas of law and courts and justice that they made adjustments to, where you have to self-finance yourself and stuff. So this just gives you a flavour of what he's put in place. Now, it says here in The Guardian, this was last Thursday's Guardian, other measures introduced by the former Justice Secretary, Chris Grayling, that have been quashed or ditched, right? Criminal court charges that required defendants pleading guilty at magistrates' court to pay £150 and those convicted at Crown courts to pay £1,200. More than 100 magistrates resigned over the charges, by the way. You're now listening to one of those magistrates that did. Michael Gove scrapped the charges after he replaced Grayling as Justice Secretary. Grayling set up Just Solutions International, a commercial arm of the Justice Ministry, to sell prison training to Saudi Arabia. Gove ditched JSI and cancelled the Saudi contract after a dispute with the then Foreign Secretary, Philip Hammond. You can see where all these Brexit arguments are likely to break out from, aren't you? The Court of Appeal ruled the cuts to legal aid for prisoners were inherently unfair and thus unlawful. The court said important decisions about prisoners could not be made efficiently or fairly in the light of the cuts. Legal aid restrictions meant victims of domestic violence in family courts, that's the civil county court and that branch of the court system, had to show they had been targeted in the past 5 years to get legal aid. The government ended the limit. One of the most high profile controversies of the tenor was the decision to stop prisoners receiving books and limit the number of books each prisoner could have in a cell. The High Court ruled in December 2015 that restricting prisoners' access to books was unlawful, and Gove scrapped the rules. So that gives you an idea of what all this judicial shake-up was all about. Of course, long forgotten until we brought it up here on the Big Debate. Getting back to the employment tribunals, the government, as we've seen, was forced into a reversal of the Employment Tribunal fee system. The highest UK court came down in favour of the trade union Unison, which argued the fees of up to £1,200 were preventing workers from getting justice. The Ministry of Justice said it would stop charging the fees immediately and would put in place arrangements to refund those who had been charged since their introduction in 2013. Unison said more than £27 million would need to be refunded. Now, the Supreme Court said it has based its conclusion on the fact that the fees were inconsistent with access to justice. The panel, seven justices said the fees were also contrary to the Equality Act 2010 as they disproportionately affected women. David Prentice, the Unison's General Secretary, said the ruling was a huge victory for employees. Unscrupulous employers no longer have the upper hand. That is the case to a degree. There are still hurdles to cross in employment tribunals. You've still got a long way to go to actually get it registered. But this will change things, to say the least, because obviously that was the flagship of preventing employees bringing their bosses to account in the justice system, was to use money, and now that's been pushed aside. It's going to be interesting to see what now actually happens, and I do have some experience, first-hand experience, of now the new system going forwards from last week. So very, very interesting stuff. What we got here, Professor Nicole Busby, acting head of Strathclyde University Law School, said it was a very good day for access to justice. The TUC General Secretary Francis O'Grady said this is a massive win for work people. Too many low-paid workers couldn't afford to uphold their rights at work, even when they've faced harassment or have been sacked unfairly. Tribunal fees have been a bonanza for bad bosses, giving them the free rein to mistreat staff. Mike Spice of the CBI said the ruling would leave employers concerned about a return to the past, when despite winning the majority of cases, companies would often settle to avoid a costly and protracted process, even when their case was strong. Charges started at £160 for a claim for lost wages or breach of contract. More serious claims, including unfair dismissal, had a fee of £250 plus a hearing fee of £950. This meant a total charge of £1,200. Further fees were incurred for appeals. Of course, the history behind employment tribunals here in the UK was to actually stem the rise in industrial unrest in the late 60s and 70s. So when they say a return to the past, I don't quite know what they mean by that. It's still very difficult to lodge an employment tribunal. The document is something like 16 pages long, when not so long ago, about 10 years ago, it was only two sides. And you just filled it out, and as best you could, and send it off, and you're back in the game. Good evening to Babis. Rendell's with us still. David RB is over there in the production suite, pumping out the tunes for music breaks and all the rest of it. So it's all good stuff. Talking of music breaks, actually, I think it might be a good idea to have a look at some more deep cut inquests after the music break. So, Dave, if you could do the honours, please, and play some music, that'd be great.
Judge Jim's Big Debate on Trax FM.
Living on free food tickets, watering the milk from a hole in the roof where the rain came through. What can you do? Tears from your little sister, crying because she doesn't have a dress without a patch for the party to go. But you know she'll get by, 'cause she's living in the love of a common people, far from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to, mama's gonna love it just as much as she can. And she can. It's a good thing you don't have it's us there. People fall through the hole in your pocket and you lose it in the storm on the ground. You gotta walk in the town to find a job. Try to keep your hands warm. When the hole in your shoe, let the snow come through until you're to the bone. Somehow you better go home where it's warm, where you can live in the love of the common people. Far from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love you just as much as she can. And she can. Dream ain't easy, but the closer the knit, the tighter the fit, and the two stay away. Just take them in stride for family pride. You know that faith is your foundation, with a whole lot of love and a warm conversation. But don't forget to pray, just making it strong where you belong. And we're living in the love of the common people, smiles from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love it just as much as she can. And she can. Yes, we're living in the love of a common people. Smiles from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love it just as much as she can. Living in the love of a common people. Smiles from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love it just as much as she can. Living in the love of a common people. Smiles really hard on a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love it just as much as she can.
Son of Paul Young. We're having some fun in the chat room, and I think it's because Babish is in there. Babish, you'll love Rendell. Welcome to Just Jim's Big Debate. We're talking all things, and I'm glad the judge is getting back to the deep cut inquest. Judge, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, David. Yeah, Babish joins us. He hasn't been around on the Big Debate chat room for a little while. I think the rain must have stopped his girls' football team from playing tonight, but he's more than welcome here, despite his views are welcome about the EU passport control, although I think one of his colleagues has got completely the wrong end of the stick. But then again, if you were to see his haircut, I think that'd explain everything. And that bolt, those bolts coming out the side of his neck. Crikey. Anyway, look, more serious matters to hand. I think it was late last year we finished off one of the other deep cut inquiry inquests from Private Eye. I've got a fresh article, because it wasn't just about one cadet, army cadet that had killed themselves at deep cut. It was two, and it turns out there was actually a series of them, and it seems to be a regime down there. Anyway, this is what this article in Private Eye had to say, and we'll be keeping abreast of things as we do here. Another chapter in the grim history of the deep cut army barracks in Surrey looks set to open after the Attorney General Jeremy Wright, Queen's Counsel, gave permission last week for the family of a third of the four recruits found dead from gunshot wounds to seek a new inquest. The parents of Jeff Gray, who was only 17 when he was found with two gunshot wounds to the head while on lone guard duty at the base in September 2001. Now, if you remember back to the other previous cases, that was a trend for those two individuals as well. will now have to apply to the High Court for the final go-ahead, but it is clearly just a matter of time. The first inquest, 5 months after the young recruit's death, lasted barely 4 hours, relied on a file containing just 20 pages of evidence and returned an open verdict. But it raised more questions than it answered, and his parents, Jeff and Diane Gray, never accepted the immediate assertions of the army and police that their son had taken his own life, which again cast your mind back to the other inquests, were the same conclusions of those families as well. Like the other botched investigations into the recruit's deaths, there was no forensic examination of the scene. In Jeff's case, the crucial weapons log was actually removed from the armory the night of his death and later shredded. Now, if that doesn't pose a question, I'm not quite sure what does, because of course if you shot someone, there could be a chance, not necessarily for sure, but there could be a chance that there'd be a blood splatter on that piece of on the stock of the rifle, or possibly the barrel, or if it was a pistol. So you can't actually trace which gun, which piece was used, and potentially have a blood splatter. And of course, a blood splatter would determine, or could contribute to determination of whether it was suicide or at point blank range from someone else, or a distance, of course. Having finally secured boxes containing 32,000 documents from Surrey Police, Jeff Gray told the Eye they contained damning material, and he was confident an inquest would finally get the truth of the events out of the control barracks on the night his son died. I've already got a cup of tea, thank you, David. Having been passed the file in January this year by lawyers acting for the parents, the Attorney General finally said last week that he was satisfied fresh evidence had come to light which had not been put to the initial inquest. This is all sounding familiar. Jeff was the third of four recruits to die at the barracks, and the youngest. A new inquest has already been heard into the death of 18-year-old Cheryl James. The coroner in her case, Judge Brian Barker QC, was scathing about deep cuts, toxic bullying, and we'll just stick with the bullying culture. While he concluded that for some inexplicable reason, the bubbly recruit had turned her rifle on herself, he added that she would never have been placed in this dangerous situation where that was possible. A second inquest into the death of Sean Benton at 20, the oldest of the four, is due to start next January. A key question will be whether repeated serious physical and mental abuse suffered by Sean, who was known to be vulnerable, was a factor to his death. The family of the fourth recruit, James Collinson, also 17, who died of a single wound to the head on March 2002, just 5 months after Jeff Gray, are also preparing an application to the Attorney General. His initial inquest had also recorded an open verdict. So very, very interesting. The inquest around Deep Cut, all the same traits in that short article seems to be mirrored from all the others. And if you go back in the Tracks FM archives, you can find them all there, where we've read them out. I mean, we couldn't read it all out. Some of the articles are absolutely massive. But what's more interesting as well, listeners, I can't find anything about Deep Cut in any of the mainstream newspapers or media. It always comes alarmingly, really, from private eyes. Because should we not know about this? Because this is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. So, David, it's back over to you, old bean, for a coffee and cake break.
Contact Judge Jim's Big Debate on Skype, Tracks Big Debate, Twitter, this is Jim Tracks FM. Email thebigdebate@tracksfm.org. Join the Tracks FM chat room, www.tracksfm.org. Tracks FM, the original 103.3 Pirates.
State your name, cuz.
Stormzy, innit?
And what are we doing today?
Rapping, innit?
Yeah?
I'm just rapping, innit?
Yeah? Fire in the pot. Let's go.
Man try to see he's better than me. Tell my man, shut up. Mention my name in your tweets. I rude boy, shut up.
Shut up.
Better than me? Shut up.
Shut up.
Best in the scene. Tell my man, yo, couple man call me a backup dancer. On stage at the Brits, I'm a backup dancer. If that makes me a backup dancer, the man in your vids,
backup dancer.
The man in your pics,
backup dancer.
Man wanna chat about backup dancer. Big man like me with a beard, I'm a big man, how the fuck can I? Army comes everywhere I go. I can't run with my enemy show. Walk in the club with all of my chugs. Party's done, everybody go home. Apart from the girl, them you lot stay. Walk in the club with a girl, say hey. Tell a man like I'm K to the A. There's no champagne, we don't rate. Yeah, I'm the best, I'm so cocky. I got a mob like ASAP Rocky. I set trends, dumb man copy. They catch feelings, I catch bodies. They roll deep, I roll squaddy. Got about 25 goons in my posse. They drink Baileys, I drink Vossi. I get murky, they get worried. If you got a G-A-T, bring it out. Most of the real bad boys of the South. If you wanna do me, something I'm about. I'm not a gangster, I'm just about. But you see my man up there with a pouch. There one of you, man, try get loud. All of my man, them move so foul. I might sing, but I ain't sold out. Nowadays, all of my soul sold out. Headline tour, yeah, blood sold out. When we roll in, they roll out. I'm so London, I'm so South. Food on the ends like there ain't no drought. Fips don't talk like he's got no mouth. I wanna make my mum so proud. Like, yo, mum, book a flight, go now. All of my ex-girls talking me hard. Talk to my face and talk to my palm. Had full bills and I bought me a car. Little red whip that I bought for my march. I straight nerfs and walk in the park. I take care when I walk on my plants. These MCs wanna talk about Lord of the Mics.
You ain't even Lord of your yard.
Dead MCs, blood, leave me alone. Me and your girl wanna speak on the phone. Kill a whole crew of MCs on my own. Kill a whole crew of MCs for the throne. I was out hungry, so I'm hungry. Man, try to eat, then leave me the bones. Now the diggity ain't need me to grow. Hot chocolate and a panini to go. I'm a big man, fuck a postcode war. Man, I'm upset by the mobile awards. Yeah, I was guest at the mobile awards.
Why?
Cause I ain't won a mobile before. Duh, all of you MCs sound so bitter. Shut down Wireless, shut down Twitter. Shout out DP, shout out Flipper. Best my age, yeah, blood. Look, if you don't rate me, shame on you. If you don't rate me, shame on you. Can I order a deathbed for an MC? He wants beef, let me make that too. Anyone else wanna make that move? Anyone else wanna pay their dues? Imposters wanna take my tune. Stiff chocolate, yeah, my face so smooth. Check it, don't even talk too much or a talker. The man still go halves and a quarter. Saw me turn from a prince to a pauper. Two cigarettes and a bottle of water. Tell the brown star, get the bottles in order. Man in the kitchen putting in orders. Stiff chocolate, skin clear like water. Smoothing this thing, start locking up doors. Yeah? So shut your f**k off, stupid mouths. Chatting bitch, off, hey. Shut the f**k off. Shut your f**k off your mouth. Aye, rude boy, shut up. One time, yeah?
Thank you, Stormzy. Thank you. At the anthem of the general election, I think, from Jeremy Corbyn. Welcome to Chad James' Big Debate. Yeah, we're going into all things we've been discussing, employment tribunals and deep cut. And what's next, Chad? Take it away.
Watching on Twitter, a Russian reporter punched whilst live on air. He's just, I don't know what he's quite reporting, but someone's just gone up to him, giving a right hander. I don't know what that's about. It's nothing to do with Jonathan Pye. It's not a sketch, I can promise you. Yeah, just having a quick look at Twitter to see what's going on. Heavy drinkers more likely to live to 85 without dementia. Incredible. Beer-loving priests who were almost thrown out of a Cardiff bar because they thought they were a stag do. What else have we got here? Yes, of course. Let's have a look here. Yep. Oh, well, that's enough of that. We'll keep an eye on Prince Philip retires from public duties today. Another retired Greek bloke joins the rest of the pensioners club. Right, listen up here, listeners. Let's have a look here. On the front of yesterday's Guardian, the UK debt bubble is back to pre-crash highs. So listen up, people. Shore up your defences. The UK's financial watchdog announced fresh measures yesterday to protect consumers from spiralling debt, as official data showed borrowing through credit cards, overdrafts and car loans has topped £200 billion for the first time since the global financial crisis. The Financial Conduct Authority said it would crack down on the high cost of unauthorised overdrafts, which I have to say is a problem, because you can only go a couple of quid over and they want to sting you for £20 or £30. And that's before we even look at credit cards. Gee, wow, you see some of the APRs on those. Absolutely incredible. Overdrafts and also reviewing the booming car loan market. That's interesting. 4 out of 5 cars are now bought on personal contract finance deals. Probably most of those are BMWs, I would suggest. The regular latest intervention came as the credit ratings agency Moody's also warned on the household debt mountain, saying that some borrowers would struggle to repay debt as the economy faltered and inflation ate into their salaries. Now, I'd be interested to hear from people. I'll get back to the article in a minute. I was thinking about this the other day. Was the economy slowing down anyway, or did the economy slow down because of the Brexit vote? What's your opinion? I want to hear from you. I'm not saying either side is right or wrong, but what I would want is someone to argue their case. Was the British economy slowing down anyway? Is there evidence of that, or was it a slowdown from the Brexit vote? You know where I am on here. You come and join us on the chat room. You don't have to sign in. You can join as a guest, or you can register and have a handle and be a regular like everyone else, or you can get hold of me on Twitter. It's really up to you. I want to hear from you what you've got to say, because I think it was already slowing down anyway, personally, and they shoved this under the Brexit umbrella. But I want to hear your views, please. Babis has come in with something. What's he got? The problem is with all the pips out there buying the new Mazda in credit. Wow, there we go. Maybe we'll have a new trade deal with Japan. That's something to think about. Even cheaper Japanese cars. Unsecured consumer credit as well, which includes credit cards, car loans, overdrafts, peaked in the autumn of 2008, just as the banking crisis was taking hold. It fell in subsequent years, but has been rising again since 2014 and is now within touching distance of the pre-crisis lending boom. Data from the Bank of England released yesterday showed it grew by 10% in the year to June to almost £201 billion. The last time outstanding debt was above £200 billion was December 2008, when it reached £208 billion. Is it a case of people trying to make the cost gap? What I mean by that is, are families, are households taking enough money home? Are they being paid enough or not? And they're using their credit cards and loans and debts and whatnot to try and bridge that gap. And of course, as the pound has fallen since June of last year, it might be because of Brexit, but it has fallen, that importing goods from abroad has made things more expensive and thus nudged inflation up to 2.9%. So basically, we want to hear from you. Are you one of those people that's feeling the pinch once again? And once again, we face, by the looks of it, the same set of circumstances that we did almost 10 years ago. And what have we done to bridge that gap? What have we put in place? What have we done with banks to hold them to account for lending this money out? I thought things had gotten tougher to borrow money, but it seems that it hasn't. In a new research paper, the FCA said that 1 in 6 people with debt on credit cards, personal lending and car loans, that's 2.2 million individuals, were in financial distress. They were more likely to be younger, have children, be unemployed and be less educated than others. as households grapple with rising living costs, charities and policymakers have raised concerns that consumers are turning to loans amid worrying signs of a return to reckless lending by the banks. Of course, now I think that's what I was kind of saying. We want to hear from you. Maybe people are placing bets with bookmakers as well in an attempt to bridge the earnings gap with the cost of living. But we want to hear from you here on The Big Debate. David, it's over to you in the studio.
Judge Jim's Big Debate on Trax FM.
Any pain. She clean up with her face, but I love my baby. You talking money, need a hearing aid. You talking about me, I don't see a shade. Switch out my side, I like to get any lane. I switch out my car if I kill any pain. Look what you done. I'm a motherfucking star boy.
And a weekend featuring Daft Punk. Jez was just talking interestingly about lending and interest rates, and what have we learned? Jez, if you just take this on board, in America, the financial safety net was only set up for the financial collapse, but it was only set up to avoid another financial collapse, not in 1910, not in 1930. Not in 1940. It was set up only in 2010. Amazing. Take it away, Judge.
Yeah, well, the problem well, not the problem, the inactions of government have been that it's a capitalist crisis. Therefore, it's the banks that have the steer on how much money is circulated. And obviously there's the subprime mortgages and whatnot. I mean, I remember I was telling someone about it the other day that I met up with who was interested in getting a mortgage, and they're asking me questions. I said, well, back in the day, in around 2003, long before the crisis hit, but they did know it was coming. If you read several books about, but in particular about the Blair government, they knew it was coming because it was raised. The amount of debt that was being passed out and on. What you'd done, you would go and see a financial advisor and an estate agent, and I had one, and I sat down with him, and he said, how much do you need? And I said, well, that's what I need for my property, and that's it. And I thought, that's pushing it. And he's turned around and said to me, do you fancy a new Beamer? I said, pardon? He's gone, do you fancy a new Beamer? I said, I haven't even got an old Beamer, let alone a new one. I said, how much are you prepared to lend me? And he gave me a figure, and I thought, whoa, no way. I said, no, just enough for the property, please. That's more than enough. Absolutely incredible that was. And I didn't have to prove any earnings. I didn't have to show any bank statements. It was all under the rug, through a back door, close the back door. The money will be in your account in about a month's time. Absolutely incredible. In fact, they paid for the conveyancing. That was included in the product. There was no fees, nothing. And the offer of a new car as well. Not an ordinary car, not a small car, but a BMW. You want a new Beamer? Those are his words. And if they done that to me as one individual, who else are they doing that to? It's absolutely incredible. And we've learnt nothing from that by the looks of things, because people are still borrowing. Look at the interest rate on credit cards. I mean, you go on Facebook and you see you know, you get those like pages and adverts that pop up. Interest, 30% APR. Interest, 39.9% APR. And they're throwing it at you. And if to say, it's nothing. Well, it is, it's a lot. I mean, 20% is almost a quarter of the balance of that credit card. That's per annum. So if you chop that up, divide that by 12 with the minimum payments and the interest on top of that, something like 1.5 to 2% a month. That's a lot of money. It's incredible. It's the way they dress it up. It's not, to me, it's still not clear, the interest, and it's what is it? What is credit cards? They're not money. They're just a figure on a piece of card and a statement. Your money is actually the real money, and you're giving you're substituting Monopoly money for your real money, aren't you? It's incredible. So, what my advice to people is: pay as much debt off as you can, and get your running costs down as much as you possibly can. Because I think the cabbage is about to hit the fan, to say the least. What we've got here in the chat room, that I deny that, Babis, completely. Yep, that's right. David R. beat it up to £124 billion was given to the banking industry since 2009 in the UK. And, of course, they used that excuse, the 2010 government, they weren't all to blame. Gordon Brown's government introduced austerity as well, to introduce austerity into the UK. That's hardly worked, has it? Because we're now back to where we began, and there'll be another bailout, you may bet. I mean, there's always money for bombs and banks, isn't there? It's incredible. But yet the poor, the disabled, the elderly, young families, there's nothing, absolutely nothing. But watch this space, because I think if there's another crash with this flimsy government we've got here in the UK, you're going to witness a very swift election, I can tell you. And I really hope that we don't have to go through those tough times again. Well, to be quite frank, those tough times haven't exactly gone away, have they? Right, turning to international news. Now, these people are really poor here. And it just goes to show, the poorer you are, the more at risk you are. Now, this is a headline. This is from yesterday's Guardian. Hundreds die in Indian state's worst flood of the century. Gujarat relocates 130,000 people to higher ground, and there's fears that the death toll will increase as waters recede. Severe monsoon flooding has killed at least 213 people in western India, with officials fearing the death toll will rise as receding waters reveal more bodies. Nearly 130,000 people have been relocated to safer ground in Gujarat state after hundreds of cities and villages were devastated by weeks of torrential rain. Helicopters and boats have been combing areas, including the Deluge Bansakantha district, where 25 bodies, including 17 members of one family, were found in two submerged villages last week. Nearly 700 people have died across India in recent weeks as monsoon rain submerged roads, damaged electricity networks, and triggered lightning storms. Authorities in Gujarat said that the state's death toll was likely to increase as bodies of new victims were discovered. The flooding has paralysed Gujarat, with flights diverted from the airport in its largest city, Ahmedabad, where more than 150 factories shut down and 50,000 cotton farms are waterlogged. More than 4,000 animals are thought to have been killed as well. The Indian Prime Minister, Modi, who surveyed the devastation from an aircraft last week, has already pledged at least £60 million funding for interim relief efforts. Modi said the families of those killed would get 200,000 rupees, that's £2,370, in compensation, and the seriously injured would receive 50,000 rupee. A scheme for crop insurance companies to ensure quick settlements for farmers and a helpline for flood-hit communities have been set up, he said. Modi said relief efforts were being carried out at an extensive scale, with camps set up for the displaced and a search. Lost my thread then. And a search and rescue teams deployed across the region. Thousands of Indians are killed by lightning each year, most of them working in fields during the June to October monsoon season. Bihar has reported nearly 140 lightning deaths since May. So, yeah, that gives you an idea. In Assam, at least 77 people have been killed, and a statewide emergency relief operation has been underway since April. Tens of thousands of hectares of crops have been destroyed, and at least 91 animals, including seven rhinoceroses, have died in flooding at the state's Kaziranga National Park. The national park, 90% of it is under water. So there we go. It's probably the worst flooding, they're saying, in 112 years. Absolutely incredible. So that's hard times. Thanks for that, Dave. Yes, Ahmedabad. Tongue twisted today. I don't know what's going on. Haven't even had a drink in 7 years. 7 weeks. Incredible. Over to you in London for the music break.
Contact Judge Jim's Big Debate on Skype, Trax Big Debate. Twitter, this is Jim Trax FM. Email thebigdebate@traxfm.org. Join the Trax FM chat room, www.traxfm.org. Trax FM, the original 103.3 Pirates. All those lonely fields.
all. Long Hot Summer from 1983. Wish it was Long Hot Summer here. Long Hot Summer here is about a week. Gordon Bennett. Anyway, you're listening to Judge Jim's Big Debate. Take it away, Judge.
Yeah, absolutely right. Here it's about 17, windy and rainy. Absolutely incredible. So much for the summer. Anyway, look, we've been covering quite a lot of news and following the stories of Grenfell. And I'm turning back now to yesterday's Guardian. There's two articles here concerning Grenfell. And this one, I'll start with the smaller one first. Tower resident loses court fight over cladding. Both interesting stories, by the way. A London council can tell residents to move back into four tower blocks evacuated after the Grenfell Tower fire, despite fears about cladding on the buildings, a High Court judge ruled yesterday. Camden Council began moving people back into Chilcot's estate in Swiss Cottage, North London, on a floor-by-floor basis this month after internal fire safety works. But in a case that could not have been But in a case that could have had ramifications for council tenants in tower blocks across the country, Letitia Esposito, who lives on the third floor of Dorney Tower on Chilcot's estate, wanted the council to keep paying for her temporary accommodation until government safety tests on cladding had been completed. The court heard that initial tests by the council indicated the aluminium composite material cladding had no fire retardant properties, but Mrs. Justice May ruled yesterday that Camden had not acted unreasonably. I simply do not see sufficient or any irrational in what Camden have done, she said. Esposito and eight others Chilcot residents will now have to leave their paid-for temporary accommodation. About 25 estate residents were in court. Esposito lives with her two children, aged 14 and 21. The elder one has depression and anxiety, a counsel, Christopher Jacobs, said. He told the court that the results of the government tests on the cladding are expected by the end of this week and that Esposito should be entitled to stay in temporary accommodation until they are known. Esposito was told to move back on the 17th of July, but the deadline was extended to the 27th of July after representations by her solicitors. An application for interim relief was lodged with the court. Cladding has been blamed for the rapid spread of the fire at Grenfell Tower, which is believed to have killed about 80 people. So there you go. See, the legal proceedings have started into Grenfell, and it would seem as well that the inquiry that has been set up may have to be paused because it's going to have to be suspended for a long period of time, according to the Guardian, if prosecutors authorise corporate manslaughter charges. Last week, police identified Kensington and Chelsea Council and the organisation that managed the tower block as suspects, creating the potential for a conflict with the Sir Martin Moore Bicks public inquiry. The pace of the police investigation raises questions about which should take priority. Now, it turns out that legal opinion is divided, although most believe the criminal investigation must go ahead first. Now, I think that's probably wise to put that up front first, and that will actually establish a lot of what the inquiry was set up for us, and the inquiry was set up for how did this happen. And of course, a criminal investigation will find a lot of that out as well, which certainly should do. However, survivors and residents have expressed alarm at the prospect of the official inquiry being delayed or diluted. So it's a bit of a dilemma, as you can see. The Grenfell Tower inquiry is considering options, including whether it might have to radically refocus its approach or delay its hearings. It's due to send recommendations about its terms of reference to the Prime Minister as early as next week. Now, I think for a lot of the residents at Grenfell, it was in fact the terms of reference that was the issue, because they felt it was too narrow. Now, having done some research on Hillsborough who framed Colin Wallace and various other investigations and inquiries, the Sun newspaper phone tapping inquiry, the terms of references are always too narrow. And it would seem that when we have these murders and disasters and these things that bloody the hands of government, that it appears that the terms of references for those inquiries are far too narrow, and that we don't actually say to ourselves, well, the Hillsborough, look how long that took to flush out the justice of that. Look at Deep Cut, for example, another inquiry with a narrow terms of reference applied to it. Let's give the panel or the judge or whoever's doing the investigation and the inquiry a free hand. Let's not give them a terms of reference. Let's see how they get on with an open book, no matter how long it takes, whatever the budget. Let's get to the bottom of what really happened, because we do need to know, and people will want closure on it as well. But I think, I suspect, providing it isn't botched and providing it's not covered up, because we will be watching, the police investigation has to go ahead first. It's over to you, Dave, in the music studio.
Judge Jim's Big Debate on Trax FM.
No.
Return of Whitetown. Do you remember that? 1997. Yeah, 1997. Yeah, I think you lived in Southall. Judge Jim's Big Debate here on www.tracksfm.org. Wicked music and chat with wicked people. Take it away, Judge.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I watched a documentary not so long ago. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of this young lady. She's her name's Stacey Dooley. She's a low budget investigative journalist on the, I believe it's the BBC. She used to have she was a retail assistant and managed to get a breakthrough onto TV, and she goes around the world doing all these 10-minute, 15-minute programs on gangs, workers that sleep rough, that sort of thing. And she went to Japan, and she'd done a program on these bars. I can't remember what they're called, but there's schoolgirls that work in these bars, and they serve older men drinks, and there's a hint of prostitution in this, because of course in Japan there's no such thing as child protection. Well, there is a little bit, but there isn't as much child protection laws as the UK. And she went around interviewing the girls and the punters that would talk to her, and all the rest of it. Do look it up, go and watch it, it's brilliant. And I came across an article today, because one of the people she interviewed, one of the men she interviewed, actually had this in his flat, his apartment, and I found it quite intriguing, to say the least. And it was a child sex lifelike doll, and I found this article in the Guardian yesterday, and it's asking for a call in the to change the law as custom sees child sex dolls. Now, just minded that we're a bit pressed for time, but I'll run through this, see what you think. An increase in the number of seizures of childlike sex dolls by border officers has led to investigations to identify dozens of previously unknown suspected paedophiles. The lifelike silicone dolls, which weigh about 25 kilos, that's 55 pounds, and can cost thousands of pounds, are imported, being sold on sites including Amazon and eBay, the National Crime Agency has said. They were a relatively new phenomenon in the UK and should be criminalised, said Hazel Stewart, the operations manager at the NCA Child Exploitation and Online Protection Command. Border Force officers have seized 123 such dolls since March 2016. Seven people have been charged, including one man who has been jailed. The figures were revealed as a judge at Canterbury Crown Court dismissed an attempt by a barrister representing David Turner, a former primary school governor and church warden, to argue that a doll he had imported was not obscene. Turner, 72, pleaded guilty yesterday to importing the doll after an application to dismiss the charge was turned down. Of seven men who have been charged, six also faced allegations linked to child abuse images. David Scully, Deputy Director for Intelligence Operations at Border Force, said this showed that the people who ordered the dolls were primarily manufactured in China and Hong Kong, often committed sex crimes. These items, he's been quoted as saying, were going to individuals in many cases who were committing other offences in relation to the harm of children, said Scully, who added that many had been previously unknown to British law enforcement agencies as potential paedophiles. The article does go on, but of course I've gone over time a little bit, so it's absolutely incredible, really. And I just wanted to touch on that. So we'll be keeping an eye on all of that. There's just turning back to the case of Turner. Turner's case was described as setting an important precedent as to how suspects can be prosecuted, although he was unable to be sentenced yesterday. And this is normal. This is quite bog standard to do this. A pre-sentence report had not been prepared. The judge, Simon James, said the importation of a child sex doll was an unusual offence, which adds a degree of complexity. Turner was freed on bail to be sentenced on the 8th of September for the importation charge and for pleading guilty at an earlier hearing to possessing or making more than 34,000 indecent images of children aged from about 3 to 16. So there you have it. Dolls, life-size child dolls. Absolutely incredible. You've been listening, of course, to Judge Jim and the Big Debate here live on Trax FM. A big thank you to Babis. A massive thank you to Rendell for his show. I'm going to hand you over now to DJ Kev. Thanks, Dave.
Judge Jim's Big Debate on Trax FM.